This is episode 121 of Teacher Approved. You're listening to Teacher Approved, the podcast helping educators elevate what matters and simplify the rest. I'm Heidi.
And I'm Emily. We're the creators behind Second Story Window, where we give research-based and teacher-approved strategies that make teaching less stressful and more effective. You can check out the show notes and resources from each episode at secondstorywindow.net.
We're so glad you're tuning in today. Let's get to the show.
Hey there, thanks for joining us today. In today's episode, we're helping you make the most of your test review time and sharing a teacher-approved tip for teaching test skills.
We start our episodes with a morning message, just like we used to do at morning meeting in our classrooms. This week's morning message is a fun one. It is, think of the last show you watched. Your new profession is the main character's job in that show. So, Emily, what is your new job?
My new job is an obituary writer.
And do you happen to see the ghosts of the people you're writing obituaries for?
I guess we'll find out. It's a new job. I just got it today.
Very exciting.
What's your new job?
Well, as a surprise to everyone, including me, I am now vicar of a quirky English village.
And I would say the name of the show, but I bet you most of our listeners have not heard of it.
No, but Vicar of Dibley needs more love.
It is a good one. And so is Dead to Me. No, and so is not dead yet. We got a kick out of these responses. Stacy, Elizabeth, and Shawnee are all now drug lords. Griselda was very popular this week. Catherine is a pirate captain.
Go, Catherine.
Danielle is a Texas Ranger.
Move over, Chuck Norris.
Shelly is running a haunted bed and breakfast.
Love that show.
Gail says, police detective, no thanks. That feels like teaching middle schoolers.
Probably true.
April is a miracle worker. Jennifer is Queen of England. And we have several new firefighters, detectives, spies, and doctors.
Busy people.
There's a lot of shows with those. And Donna is a chef. Hillary is an assistant to the editor-in-chief for Mode magazine. Appreciate this callback to Ugly Betty.
Love that show. So good.
Abby is a 7-year-old blue healer, and I think she might have won this game. That's a fun job. I'd like to have the job of being bluey. And lots of teachers ended up back as teachers because they just watched Abbott Elementary. We'd love to know your new TV-based profession. Come join the conversation in our teacher-approved Facebook group.
Even though there is still a fourth of the school year left, we are right in the middle of everyone's favorite season, or least favorite season. Testing season.
Our motto here at the Teacher Approved Podcast is to elevate what matters and to simplify the rest. And that's what we want to help you do with your test prep.
Now, administrators and, you know, the people outside your classroom often send the message that there isn't anything unimportant when it comes to the curriculum. And in one sense, that is true. The standards are in the curriculum for a reason. Because as teachers, we usually only have a scope for this 1 year. We don't necessarily have the big picture of how understanding is built strand by strand across several grades. So it is important that we cover the core.
But even though everything in the curriculum is important, it doesn't mean that everything is equally important, right? Not every standard can be your top priority. There's just not enough time to review using a glossary with the same energy that you're giving to remembering key details in the text.
When test prep rolls around, we need to make some big decisions about which standards are worthy of our limited time and energy. So we are dedicating this episode to helping you figure out which parts of your curriculum need the most focused review. And which parts can maybe just be lovingly mentioned briefly in passing.
In our district that we used to teach in, we called our most important standards our big rocks. I think a lot of people are familiar with this metaphor, but in case it's new to someone, help us visualize that, Heidi.
Of course. So imagine you have a jar and a pile of rocks. You scoop up the rocks and put them in a jar and they just don't fit. The jar is just too small, and in this rock jar situation, you absolutely cannot get a bigger jar. So what do you do? The solution is to put the biggest rocks in first, and then the smaller rocks can fit into the spaces between the big rocks, and then voila, everything fits into the jar.
I don't know if time actually functions like rocks in a jar, but it feels true, even if it isn't exactly true.
So, sticking with the analogy, what are the big rocks of your curriculum?
So the first step to identifying those big rocks is figuring out what your students need to know. The best place to start is to find out what is covered on the test. If you've seen the test in previous years, that can give you a good idea of which standards are featured more heavily in the questions.
Another resource that I use a lot is a site called Achieve the Core. As they point out on their site, not all content in a given grade is emphasized equally in the standards. Some clusters require greater emphasis than others based on the depth of the ideas, the time they take to master, and/or their importance to future mathematics.
For each grade level, Achieve the Core has focus documents that list the math standards and rank it as either a major cluster, a supporting cluster, or an additional cluster. This can be super helpful at test prep time because you can go down the list and see which of your standards deserve the most attention.
This can be kind of hard to visualize if you haven't seen it before, so let me give you an example. So for third grade, it shows that multiply and divide within 100 is a major cluster, and so is solve problems involving the four operations. And if you're someone who teaches third grade, I'm sure that that makes a lot of sense to you. But I was surprised to see that use place value understanding and properties of operations to perform multi-digit arithmetic is considered an additional cluster. It doesn't even qualify as a supporting cluster. So yes, we want our third graders to be able to do that, but we are not going to spend a week reviewing properties. It's just not a wise use of time.
I love this resource. So helpful to help teachers narrow in on what standards really deserve the most attention.
And even if you teach in a state that doesn't use the Common Core standards, these focus documents are still actually really useful. I have found that there really isn't a huge variation between the different state cores for the same grades. So even if the focus doesn't align perfectly with your core, it will still give you some really great insight about which standards deserve the most attention.
These documents are kind of hard to find on the Achieve the Core website. So if you want to reference your grade level easily, look for Mathematics Focus by Grade Level on the website. Or you can go to the link in the show notes and we'll take you right to it.
Now, unfortunately, Achieve the Core doesn't have focus documents for language arts or science standards. And I have really searched, but I haven't been able to find anything similar on those subjects.
Darn it.
I know. It would be so handy. But if you know of something, will you please let us know and we will be sure to pass it on to our listeners.
Your best bet for ELA and science is to refer to released questions or your students' test scores from past years. This can give you a sense of not only which standards get the most questions, but how those questions are phrased.
For ELA, it is probably a safe bet that there will be lots of questions about reading comprehension. If you teach younger students, there will probably be a lot of phonics questions, and you're going to find vocabulary in every grade.
Another resource that might help you identify the big rocks of your core is our spiral review morning work.
Woohoo!
We organized our pages so that the most important standards are being covered most frequently. That's why we give second graders a daily place value question and third graders a daily multiplication question, but they only have a telling time question once a week.
And language arts was trickier to plan because we didn't have that focus document, but we gave the standards that impact other standards the most weight. So grammar is covered every day, as well as phonics and spelling. We have a lot of vocabulary questions, but we don't have as many questions about figurative language, shades of meaning, or dictionary skills.
Yeah, dictionary skills definitely fall into the little rocks category. Morning work can also help you figure out where to focus your test review by helping you spot where your students are struggling.
This is such a valuable gift of daily morning work. If I can see my second graders are struggling every time a money question shows up in their morning work, that lets me know that my kids need extra support with reviewing money.
But the opposite of that is also true. If I see that most of my students are confident with money problems or fractions or grammar, that tells me that it's not worth spending a lot of review time on those topics. Maybe I want to do some small group work with my kids who are still struggling, but planning a bunch of money review activities for the whole class is probably a waste of time when we could be reviewing story problems because you know they always struggle with story problems.
They do always struggle with story problems.
Yeah, they're the worst.
Yeah. And that is why each of our morning work pages includes a daily story problem. It's almost like we put a crazy amount of thought into how we structured our pages.
And wrote, oh, so many story problems.
So many. I probably could be in the Guinness World Records for most story problems written.
By an individual person, for sure.
Yeah,
thousands. Your own bank of questions. If you haven't used our morning work with your class before, or if you've gotten out of the habit, it's not too late to start now. Spiral review is so beneficial anytime, but especially before testing.
If you are interested in some morning work, we have a 2-week free sample that you can sign up for. We will put the link to our morning work and that sample in the show notes so you can find exactly what you need.
Once you've identified the big rocks of your curriculum, you have a pretty good sense of which topics should get most of your review time. But you might also want the input of the people most impacted by your testing.
And no, we don't mean your admin. We are talking about your students. Consider asking your students how they feel about the topics you've taught this year. You could have an open-ended question like, which math topics are you confident with? Which ones are you still learning? Or you could give students a list of your standards and have them rank themselves in proficiency.
Yeah, you could do something like a 1 through 10 scale or have them circle the emoji face that matches how they feel about their understanding of that topic. If a lot of kids are feeling shaky about measurement, that can help you know it's worthwhile to spend some time on that standard, even if you feel like they're doing pretty well.
So as you are scheduling your test prep, remember you don't have time to focus on every standard equally. Make your review time effective by identifying which standards matter most, and then find the holes in your students' understanding so you know you're putting an effort where it will have the biggest impact.
We'd love to hear how you decide what to review for end of year testing. Come join the conversation in our teacher-approved Facebook group.
Hey there, teacher friend. Do you have a question or concern that could use a teacher-proof solution?
We'd love to help you out by answering your question here on the podcast. You can submit your questions to hello@secondstorywindow.net and put podcast question in your subject line. Can't wait to hear what's on your mind.
We are trying out a new segment here on the podcast. We tried it out a couple weeks ago, so this is, I guess, is our second run. Each week, we're shining a spotlight on a procedure and sharing our tips for how to better implement that procedure in your classroom.
We have a procedure resource that looks at 26 essential classroom procedures and offers oh so many guiding questions to help teachers think through all the nitty-gritty details they need to consider for their own classrooms. Heidi and I have each chosen one of the questions to talk about. Hopefully, as you hear our ideas, it will get the wheels turning for what you want to see happening in your own class. This week, we're looking at procedures for classroom routines. So which question did you want to discuss, Heidi?
So I picked the question, if a student is absent, how will they get the work they missed? And that maybe seems like a strange question to be doing at this point in the year. And like, you do have to figure that out for your students that are regularly absent. But it takes on a special twist during test review season. Because you need to figure out what happens if a student misses an important test review. So you need to have a plan for how you can make sure that those students are still able to review the content, and that I don't know that I have a winning suggestion because that might take some extra thought on your part. One suggestion I have is maybe you could forego your regular small groups in favor of a small review group. And so you're just pulling the kids that need to be working on that topic. Or you could work as a team and have one teacher take all of the kids that need to review fractions, for example, and then you split that teacher's class among the other teachers in your team and you all play math games with the kids that need more enrichment than they do review. And then you also have to figure out what happens if a kid actually misses testing. There are probably some really like strict protocols around that.
Yep.
So make sure that if, you know, you're new to this test or new to the school or new to this grade, you have that answered before you get into the hot water of all the testing protocols.
So much fun.
So Emily, which routine question did you pick?
Well, I picked, what will you do for birthdays? Now, again, this is another one that you're probably like, it's a little late for this. But you could think about how it's working so far for you this year and what you might want to change for next year. So for birthdays, I just like to give the students a small gift. So I would batch prepare their gifts before the school year started. And obviously, I included extras since we might get new students mid-year. And I like to keep it small too, like a bargain paperback book from the book orders. So you might want to be looking at that now if you want to order those for next year. Or you could do a fun pencil or pen or something like that. This year, my daughter's teacher did those multicolor pens with different colors that you can click. She loved that, had a cute little tag on it. And then you need to decide if you want to do any other kind of celebrations in your classrooms for birthdays. It probably depends on the grade. I felt like in second grade, we didn't have to go too over the top with birthdays. Just a small class acknowledgement was enough. But there are a lot of different things you can do.
This is a great time of year to figure that out so you can get ahead for next year. And I've also noticed that, like, as May and June roll around, a lot of stores will have sales on things that are meant to occupy kids during the summer, like in the Target spot, mm-hmm. or even craft stores in their kind of like kid activity sections.
Yeah.
They'll have sales on things. So you could get a whole class set of like a fun little craft or something at a really good price if you're on top of it enough to get started now.
Right. So this is a great time of year to think about it for those reasons, and also because you are currently in the thick of a school year, so you can really see any problems that may have arisen with the birthday celebrations. Maybe you did something you don't want to continue. Maybe you did something you do want to continue.
Hopefully these questions got your wheels turning a little bit about how you want things to run in your own classroom. And make sure to check out our other guiding questions so you can think through all of the nitty-gritty, itty-bitty details that make your classroom run so smoothly.
Yeah, and we'll put a link to that in the show notes. Now let's talk about this week's teacher-approved tip. Each week we leave you with a small, actionable tip that you can apply in your classroom today. This week's teacher-approved tip is to actually teach students how to take a test. What can you tell us about this, Heidi?
If you have had the experience of watching your students take a standardized test, you know how infuriating it can be. Your students know the content. You know they know the content, but you're watching them make mistake after mistake on the test. I mean, it's maddening. And, you know, there are multiple reasons for this. But one reason is that the wording on a test can be so confusing. I pulled up some released test questions, and this was like one of the very first ones on this test. And it proves my example perfectly. So this is the exact wording of a question that followed a reading passage. Read the dictionary entry in the box. Head 1, to lead something. 2, to go in a certain direction. 3, to give a title to. 4, to place at the beginning of. Based on the passage, which meaning of the word head is used in paragraph 1? A, meaning 1. B, meaning 2. C, meaning 3. D, meaning 4.
Oh my gosh. It's so unnecessarily confusing.
Right? The kids taking this test have to go through like 3 complicated steps before they can even choose an answer, which leads us to the question, is this really measuring if kids understand how to use dictionary skills? But whatever.
Yeah.
Tricky wording is how the kids are going to make mistakes on tests, and test publishers need 50% of kids to fail a question in order for it to be a valid question.
Oh, woof.
So how do we keep our students from falling into the 50% who miss that question?
Especially the ones who miss it for no good reason, like they know the content, but just were confused.
Yeah. And fortunately, there's no guarantee. But one strategy is to teach your students about testing. A standardized test is like its own genre of literature.
Mm-hmm.
So we can teach it the same way we taught the genres of fables and biographies. And we do that by planning lessons that highlight the features of a test and give students lots of experiences working with those features.
Yeah. So if my students are going to have questions like the one you read, I want to make sure to teach my students how to go back to a certain place in a text. Maybe the paragraphs are numbered, but maybe they're not. I also need to teach students how to go back into the question to find information. A lot of kids probably won't even recognize that the choices of meaning 1 and meaning 2 refer to the different definitions of head listed in the question.
Yeah, why they couldn't just make the definitions the options on the test?
Seriously.
Ugh, it's maddening. Kids also need support in understanding things like when to choose all of the above or what to do when a couple of answers seem like the right choice, but they can only pick one. There is really actually a lot to unpack with the genre of a multiple choice test.
With these end of year tests, knowing how to take a test is almost as important as knowing the right answer.
No joke. To wrap up the show, we are sharing what we're giving extra credit to this week. Emily, what gets your extra credit?
I'm giving extra credit to my new Kindle accessories.
Ooh, fancy.
I upgraded my generic Amazon Kindle case to one from a shop called Page, which has really fresh, fun, modern designs. I just got a brightly colored geometric pattern, but there are some funny ones that say things like not smut on the cover, which definitely means it is smut. And our mom gave us both Kindle Page Turner remotes for Christmas. And I thought, I didn't need this. But guys, it's a total game changer. You clip a little receiver onto your Kindle, and then you can prop it up or put it on a stand and use your remote to turn the page. It's so much more comfortable, especially if you want to like lay on your side in bed or keep your arms warm under a blanket. Both of these have been big boosts to my reading life.
Yeah, you can't go wrong with that.
What are you giving extra credit to, Heidi?
Well, this is much less exciting, but my extra credit goes to the Hearth Amber light bulb. That's Hearth, H-A-R-T-H. I have had the same amber light bulb in my bedside lamp since 2016, I think. And it finally burned out the other day. And when I was replacing it, I just had this moment where I realized how much I enjoy having that light in my bedroom. It gives everything kind of a soft, sunsetty glow. And like, I really do appreciate the coziness. But the real reason I started using an amber light bulb was for the circadian rhythm benefits, because my sleep is all wacky. Regular light bulbs use too much blue light, and that can make it hard to fall asleep. So I like that I can have this in my lamp before bed, or I can turn it on in the middle of the night without worrying that my brain is going to start thinking that it's time to get up. There are lots of brands of amber light bulbs that are probably all similar. I haven't tried any of the other ones, but I will put a link in the show notes to the Hearth brand that I liked.
And you got me one, but I haven't used it yet. So when my light bulb burns out, I'll have to put that one in there and give
Absolutely.
It a try.
That's it for today's episode. Remember to focus your test review time on the big rocks in your curriculum, and don't forget to teach your students how to understand the genre of testing. We hope you enjoyed this episode of Teacher Approved. I'm Heidi.
And I'm Emily. Thank you for listening. Be sure to follow or subscribe in your podcast app so that you never miss an episode.
You can connect with us and other teachers in the Teacher Approved Facebook group. We'll see you here next week. Bye for now.
Bye.